everybody. Welcome to CCW Podcast. This is Dagny.
Hey, Al's here too, guys.
We're on the road, podcasting from the road, so I'm going to kind of take the lead on this episode. I'll have plenty to say, though. Don't worry about that. We're going to call this episode...
Well, welcome to episode 22. We're going to call this one Safe and Dry.
And the topic for the day is going to be dry firing, in case you couldn't tell from that title.
I always try to come up with witty titles, but safe and dry. Yeah, we're going to... You know, we realize that ammunition is very expensive right now, and that's if you can even find it. And so we're looking at ways of practically training and still improving our skill set while, you know, realizing that most of us out there can't spend $100, $200 on ammunition. And frankly, I don't think you should. So I've been working a lot on dry firing and doing a little bit of research on how to properly do it. And thought I might share some of the research. I'm going to have Dagny do, most of the talking today since I am driving. And so she'll be kind of articulating our thoughts on dry fire, and I'll try to chime in where I can. But before we get started, I wanted to give a nice shout out to On Target Radio. It's a show out in Chicago, and they recently added us as a... at least they chose to follow our podcast on Podomatic, and we're very honored for that. I haven't gotten a chance to listen to too many episodes, but I did listen to one, and it seems like these guys put on a great show. And I apologize, I don't have their names in front of me right now, and I wouldn't want to misquote their names. So, On Target Radio out of Chicago, they're on the AM station out there, and they talk about all things guns related in Ohio and on Illinois. And they focus in on the Illinois movement, and it's pretty interesting stuff. So I definitely want to thank them for listening to our show, and I appreciate it.
All right, so I guess we're going to start off just maybe defining dry fire and then some safety rules that you should follow.
Well, let's go over the safety rules first. I wrote those down because I wanted to... It's interesting to me. Most of the modern instructors and the materials I've read, videos I've watched, they seem to articulate the four rules of gun safety. And we can go over those pretty soon here. But the NRA, the National Rifle Association, uses three basic rules of gun safety. And we wanted to kind of go over all of those rules just so you know the kind of the general gun rules overall. There's a lot of overlap between the two rules, but it's interesting how each group states what. And so we can start off with the four rules of gun safety. That's, you know, if you typically, if you bought a DVD or something, that this is what they'd say in the beginning.
All right, so the first rule there is the gun is always loaded.
Right, so I think that basically would mean anytime you encounter a gun, you assume it is loaded. And what do? We don't sit on that assumption. We definitely check it, right? So we'll either drop the magazine out, pull the slide back, lock it back, look inside, put your finger in it, verify with another person if there's one available, and have them literally take the firearm from you and look at it if that's what you're trying to do at that point, is verify whether or not it's loaded. So I think that's a pretty good assumption, pretty good rule to start with.
Yeah, you always want to check any weapon that you get your hands on.
Right. And then definitely even in gun stores, gun shops, if you're looking to buy a firearm and the person behind the glass is handing you a firearm and they've even cleared it and checked it, it would be a good idea for you to treat it like he hasn't even checked it at all and make sure, you know, you double check.
Yeah, a lot of people will just do it so automatically. And if you're new to guns, you might not realize why. And this is a force of habit. They drop that magazine and they pull the slide and lock it back to show it's clear.
Right. And even beyond locking it back, you might want to try to run it back and forth through two or three times and cycle it, make sure that there isn't a round somewhere stuck or something. So, yeah, that's a good first rule.
The second rule is never point the gun at something you're not willing to destroy.
Yeah, that's pretty... it's pretty self-evident. You don't want to never muzzle anything, you know, that you're not willing to live without.
The third rule, be sure of your target and what's behind it.
Yeah, that's kind of related to safe direction. You know, you might think a backstop is okay, but it's actually very thin. It's a very thin wall that a modern ball ammo or even the hollow point would go right through. And you know, you got to really think about what is on the other side of that. You know, if in the event that it were to penetrate and over penetrate. So definitely, you want to definitely be aware of what you consider to be something you're willing to destroy, and then see what's beyond it.
And the final rule, the fourth rule, keep your finger off of the trigger until you're ready to shoot.
I just wanted to say one more thing about the other rule, too, is you want to be aware of your target, what's behind it, but you also want to be aware of what's in between you and the target as well. You don't want to be trying to shoot through something that you obviously didn't intend to shoot through to get to your target. So you definitely want to be aware of what's in between you and the target, and then what's between the target and beyond. And the last rule was
finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot.
Yeah, I think that's a big issue with beginners. Thankfully, I haven't run into that much in my own personal use, but I know sometimes Dagny, particularly in the beginning, would keep that finger on the trigger when she was taking out the magazine and things like that. You definitely want to avoid that. Keep it alongside the trigger guard, you know, above and outside of the trigger guard. Let me rephrase that. Keep it above the trigger guard. Keep it out of the trigger guard. And just kind of ride it alongside the parallel to the slide or even on the slide.
Yeah. And I would just throw in here, I mean, it depends on the person who's learning how to handle a firearm, what exposure they've had. But especially if they've just been watching shows and movies. I mean, we cringe and almost chuckle when we watch some of the stuff that's just, it's horrible. So if that's where they're getting their knowledge and stuff, I mean, then they try to mimic what they've seen. It's they're not following any of the rules, more than likely.
Right. Their fingers are always on the trigger, you know, even if they're not intending to shoot. So, yeah, you definitely don't want to take a lot of cues from Hollywood. There are probably exceptions out there, but I can't think of any.
All right, so are you ready to switch over to the NRA rules?
Yeah, well, let's talk about these four rules. What do you think? Do you think they're pretty good?
I think they're pretty good. I've got the other rules in front of me. There's a lot of compare and contrast sort of things.
So let's go over the three other rules by the NRA then.
Okay, the first rule of the NRA, always keep the gun pointed in a safe direction.
That's more of a positive way to word, you know, don't point it at something you're not willing to destroy. And it seems like the NRA is geared towards a more positive phrasing of these rules, telling you affirmatively what to do. So I like that. Point a gun and always point it at the safe direction.
And I think it kind of incorporates the other rule as well. Be sure of what's behind your target. They can kind of fold those two rules into one about just keep it pointed in a safe direction.
Right. And I think the NRA does list the be aware of the target and what's behind it, but it's not in these three core rules. It's part of a larger rule set that they like to give, but it's not one of the three fundamental rules. And I think that they're saying, yeah, if you are pointing in a safe direction, it's sort of implied that you're considering all of that, but yeah.
The second rule is always keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot.
Same, similar rule, right? Is it worded the same almost?
Yeah, pretty much worded the same. And then the third rule is always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use.
Yeah, always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And when's it ready to use? Is carrying ready to use? Absolutely, right? So keep it loaded when you're carrying. It's not a rule that's saying, you know, don't keep it loaded until you're absolutely ready to shoot. You know, it's ready to use. So if you're carrying in the first thing in the morning, keeping it loaded means, you know, you're ready to use it the minute you put it on. So definitely. Or if it's by your nightstand, that's ready to use as well. So
Is there a lot of other stuff you wanted to compare and contrast between those rules? I mean, I did like what you said earlier about how the NRA seems to frame the rules in a more positive or affirmative manner. It also seems like less scare tactic. It almost seems like those four rules are phrased in a way to make you almost scared of the weapon, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think we got to remember that, you know, what videos want to do and what books want to do is kind of give a disclaimer so that there's no liability on their part. So they really do want to hammer home how serious the rules of gun safety are. And whereas the NRA kind of wants to, I would think, make it more appealable and positive, and they're shooting sports oriented as well, and they want to kind of cater to a more mainstream type of group, whereas maybe the videos that I've been watching or the books that I've been reading are geared more towards the people who want to learn personal protection and things like that. And the NRA is definitely moving towards more of the personal protection type interests, and I know that they're even considering offering a defensive pistol course, and I know that's in development right now, which is pretty outstanding. So I think the rules of the NRA and the four rules of gun safety, they both have two fundamental common rules, and if you follow the two fundamental common rules, you probably will not have a problem. And that's, you know, keep the gun pointed in a safe direction and keep your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. And both of those things, if you do that, it's going to be a one in a billion type of example where someone would actually get hurt, even if there was a discharge that was unintended. So if you know those two rules, and we decided to give you all seven rules just because, you know, if you have a knowledge of all of them, and if you just follow two of the biggest ones, there shouldn't be a problem. And definitely with dry firing, even though it's a safe exercise, you got to still remember the protocol behind it. So we decided that maybe we just go over it, even for our own fresh recollection. With that, you want to give them a little rundown on what dry firing really is?
Sure. Dry firing, it's just using your sidearm without any live ammunition in it. You're pulling the trigger and allowing the hammer or striker to fall in the empty chamber, or you could have a dummy round or something like that in there.
Right. And we don't have any dummy rounds, but the dummy round basically kind of looks like, I mean, it's obviously, it's usually a bright colored orange or something like that, where you can't confuse it with a traditional cartridge. But there is a little cushion at the back of the round, at the rear of the round, that would actually cushion the firing pin when it would strike, normally strike the primer of a live round. It would just strike the back of this dummy round or snap cap and just kind of cushion the blow of that firing pin and protect firearms, particularly those that are traditionally susceptible to damage if they were to fall on an empty chamber.
What weapons would the offhand, do you know?
You know, this is all on research, and but they say rimfire pistols and rifles, so pretty much a no-no to dry fire in on an empty chamber. So, and then also shotguns too, I believe. It's not a good idea to do. But most modern firearms, most modern pistols, they say that it's okay to dry fire, and I've been dry firing a lot with my Glock, but you want to make sure and read your owner's manual and make sure. They always say whether or not dry fire is a good idea, and if you're that worried about it, definitely invest in snap caps or dummy rounds, and you can always take it to the internet too, and I'm sure there's tons of threads on whether or not it's safe to dry fire your particular firearm.
Now, the dummy round, is it a plastic? And I guess, what's the process? Like, once you pull the trigger, does anything shoot out? I mean, are you going to see if you hit your target with that dummy round? Obviously, if you're just dry firing with nothing, you won't have any idea if you're accurately hitting a target, but...
Yeah, it doesn't... nothing ejects from it. It just literally acts as a cushion, and it's... you can kind of treat it as it's a good tool to use for drilling malfunction issues. You can act as if it had a failure to fire and treat the round as an exercise to train your skills up to getting that round out of there. You know, do the tap rack bang and assess type of thing. So
I've heard of that, where you maybe just put a couple dummies in with live at the range to practice.
I don't want to talk about live ammo in this dry fire class or this dry fire episode, because I don't want anyone to get that idea. That's a good skill set to learn outside of this, but this is dry fire, which means no live ammo near you. Okay, so don't mix dummy rounds with live ammo when you're dry firing. That's a big no-no. You don't want to do that.
And is a dummy round reusable?
Yep, it's reusable, definitely. And I did a little bit of research, and so I'm not a big expert on this, but I believe there's even these dummy rounds that have a laser that shoots out, so you can practice your dry firing, protect your firing pin, and it will kind of tell you whether or not you're jerking, because that laser light will be on the target, and then you'll do your little trigger pull, and it will either stay on the target if you've got a perfect pull, or it'll jerk left or right, and it serves as a good instruction on whether or not you're actually keeping a good sight picture, sight alignment.
Which kind of leads us to the reason why you would be dry firing and what you're accomplishing if you don't actually see your target, which is...
Well, I mean, it's like you said earlier, it's using your sidearm to practice the act of shooting exactly like you would out on the range, except there's no live ammunition. So it builds every single skill set that you would normally do at the range. So the only thing you don't have is the recoil and the immediate evidence of where the round would go. So it's a good tool to work on whether or not your front sight's staying on target even after the follow through, you know, and it gives you a ability to kind of call your shot to see if, oh, you know, if you pull your trigger and you kind of see it dip low and left, you can say, oh, you know, you can tell, okay, I'm going low and left. And so, or in my case, I go a little bit to the straight left, and I think that's because I'm not getting enough finger on the trigger. And there's many charts online. They look like they're usually in the shape of a circle, and it's kind of pied out into different slices. And it diagnoses where if your shots are going left or right, up or down, or any variation in between, it shows you the likely reason why. So in my case, it would be... The theory is that most people who shoot left of where they want to shoot is because they're not getting enough finger on the trigger. And I think that that's true with me. So it's a good way to diagnose it. Just kind of make mental notes or even write down your notes on where that trigger is going. If it's perfect, then it's a great way to just keep building on that perfection.
And also the dry firing, I mean, it's a little different than the sight picture, but the trigger control itself.
Right. You want to be smooth and you want to be consistent. And this is a good way to kind of build that skill set. What you want to do is kind of just, you know, you're almost building repetitions, and you want to keep doing a nice steady trigger pull. And the more you do it, the more the trigger on the firearm will actually get better, it seems. It seems that that's the way on my Glock. It's actually getting smoother and more fluid. And I'm realizing that, you know, that where I was 6 months ago versus where I am now, just dry firing a lot, it's night and day improvement. So,
how often are you doing this dry firing, or what do you recommend, I guess?
Well, they say to do it 10 to 15 minutes, you know, and that's, you know, it really doesn't sound like a lot of time, but you definitely don't want to do it when you're tired. You want to be pretty well energized and aware of what you're doing, just because we want to get into the habit of absolute safety. And in line with that, you want to make sure that you unload the pistol or whatever it is that you're using to dry fire, and even go into a separate location where there's absolutely no live ammunition near you. Even a separate room, a basement, is ideal. And I think, you know, want to make sure that there's an adequate backstop. You know, you want to make sure that there's, you know, 100% concentration in what you're doing. And then from there, you can do things like, you know, drawing from your holster and getting that repetition down too. I think that's a really neat way, because especially with the ranges around us, we can't draw from the holster necessarily. So it's a good way to build those repetitions as well, and get to the act of, you know, draw to firing mode, or draw and then just get into a firing position and not necessarily pulling the trigger then either. But that's a good component of dry fire as well, and that's an important skill set that we need to develop. And even various positions of shooting you can work on. Basically anything that you'd necessarily couldn't work on the range, you could definitely do as part of your dry fire exercise. If that means, you know, practicing shooting from prone position, from your knees, from kneeling, that type of thing. So, a lot of options.
Would you recommend, if someone's going to practice their draw through the fire, all as part of the dry firing. Would you recommend that they start practicing with the draw, or should they start practicing with the basic trigger control and getting that down before they start incorporating the draw with it?
I think the first thing in this whole equation is that you learn how to use a firearm safely and effectively. And I definitely would think that, number one, you want to build accuracy. You know, other than obviously following the gun safety rules and fundamentally being able to use your firearm, it's the ability to shoot where you want the rounds to go, and that's accuracy. So I would definitely say build your skill sets on initially trying to get down, I'm going to pull this trigger, and that sight picture really doesn't move much beyond my natural wobble zone. You know, if you're still jerking left and right, then perhaps maybe you should put more emphasis on dry firing and the act of dry firing, and then once you have that down, then start incorporating it from draw to the dry fire, you know?
Yeah, and then I would also point out, depending on how you carry your weapon, you need to make sure if you start practicing with the draw, that if you have to chamber, that's part of your run through, right?
That's definitely been a part of mine, is that, you know, draw, chamber, present, you know? So I've started to come up with a way that it's pretty fluid for me. Obviously, it's not as fast as people who carry with a round in their chamber. But I think, you know, with repetition, you can pretty much build on anything. And it might not be the most natural thing to do. But for me, I'm trying to ingrain that in me. And then eventually, I know that, you know, I'm going to have to carry with a round in the chamber. But for now, I'm just, you know, for my own personal reasons, not doing it. So I'm kind of training with that in mind, that draw, chamber around, present, and then fire if necessary. In the dry firing, obviously, you can factor in the firing as well.
And to that end, we've taken some video of Al doing his draws. And I know when we were doing that, we actually tried to time the difference between if he, you know, this is all dry firing, so presuming it was a round in the chamber versus not. So did he have to take the time after he drew the gun to chamber before he presented or not? And it was a pretty negligible difference, given he knew that I was going to say, go, and then he was going to start the drill.
Right, I was very much aware, right, that she was going to say at some point, okay, go. And so I was kind of, you know, already completely aware of what my intentions were going to be once I was given the green light, which is completely different than if someone, you know, blindsides you because you're in condition white and unaware that they were going to try to rob you or try to attack you or something. So I wasn't already behind the eight ball. I already knew what was going to happen. So I think that still there was a, you know, 0.25 second difference maybe. Obviously, that's a pretty big fraction of time when everything slows down in such a situation where you're going to be facing a situation where you might actually have to use your firearm. So it's a little bothersome to me, and so I've been really thinking about it, and it's something I really want to mull over. But until then, I am going to be training as I carry. So for me, that'll involve chambering around before I'm able to use the firearm.
Now, how do you feel if, because this is really coming down to muscle memory is what we're wanting to accomplish with all of this dry firing.
Right. I mean, I think Malcolm Gladwell said that the definition of an expert is that they've done whatever they've done 10,000 times. And that's kind of the goalposts I have in mind is, you know, you can become probably pretty proficient at the 3,000, 4,000 repetition mark, but 10,000 perfect repetitions is what it takes for you to become a master. And I think if you look around at all the masters out there in whatever respective fields, you know, Gladwell says it's because they've put in that work. You know, it's not this case of this person is a natural prodigy. No, prodigies have 10,000 repetitions of whatever they do, whether it's, you know, if you're lifting weights and they've lifted weights for 10,000 times. If you're playing the cello, it's because they've given 10,000 performances, 10,000 hours of practice. If you're a business manager, you've probably been in the field at least 10,000 hours, 10,000 hours of experience. So with dry fire, it's going to be at least 10,000 repetitions, you know? And I don't know about you out there, but I can't afford 10,000 rounds of commercial ammo, and even the reloads, 10,000 rounds is a lot more expensive than it used to be. So dry firing is a great way to get your 10,000 repetitions, because everything literally can be simulated except for that felt recoil.
And I think one of the last notes we had here is that once you get smooth, fast will come. Do you want to kind of expand on that?
Yeah, because, you know, you don't want to be fast and sloppy. I mean, it's easy for me to draw it and draw a firearm and present it and pull the trigger super fast, but it might or might not go where I want it to go, you know? So you always want to be in control, and I think when you first start out with the draw and even with the dry fire, go really slow, make sure your fundamentals are in place. If you have, you know, to kind of see or visualize what good form is, you can find a lot of good videos on YouTube, and there's a lot of good books out there as well. I mean, all the stuff from Masayub is great, and you know, hundreds of other names out there too. So it's easy to find good sources to emulate, and you kind of want to just maybe even have your significant other or a friend kind of look at you and kind of see and compare and contrast what perfect form is from an expert and where your form is, and kind of just say, okay, well, it looks like this guy keeps his elbow down here, and it looks like you're kind of hunched back or leaning back or not hunched forward enough, or your shoulders are too far back, those kind of skills. And that's another good reason to videotape yourself. And, you know, when I say videotape, every cell phone, every smartphone has a video camera in it, and it's super easy to kind of just take 20-second videos of you or 2-second videos of you presenting to draw and dry firing. And so things like that is, I think, it'll be very helpful for you to look at. And you want to obviously even start investing in on a timer, so you know how fast you are doing it. Maybe that might come down the road after you build your smoothness, though.
Okay. I'm just looking over, and it looks like we covered pretty much everything. This was, you know, geared towards refining your skills and doing it in a cost-effective way with where we find ourselves, you know, at present with the ammo shortage. I don't even know if you want to call it a shortage. There's lots of ammo. It's just it's all selling really quick.
Right. And, you know, it's a... Even if there were plentiful rounds and ammunition was cheap, a lot of people, a lot of the top instructors say, you know, you can never dry fire too much, right? And I think that that is true. And I've realized that, you know, I've been like, oh, I need to get out to the range, I need to do this, I need to do that. And really what I need to do is get more dry fire time in. And that's, you know, I don't think anyone has ever said, oh, I dry fire too much. You know, so I think everyone's got a deficit in the amount of dry firing they've done in their lives. So 10-15 minutes is a really small expenditure of time, and you don't want to do it right before you go to bed necessarily, unless you're fully aware of what you're doing, fully awake. You know, you want to be really in it. And if there's any you know, sloppiness involved, and you're cognizant that you are being a little bit sloppy or not, you know, giving your 100%, I think you should just stop and call it a night or call it a day and head back home, you know, or head back upstairs or wherever it is that you decided to dry fire, you know. So it's definitely a skill set that I'm working on. It's techniques that I'm definitely kind of trying to build. You can even play around with the different stances, isosceles, you know, Weaver, Chapman, doing all those things. And so, yeah, I mean, dry and safe. Those are two cool things that we can do. You know, the safety part is something you always want to do. I was thinking about dry firing, and it's the one time you want to hear a click instead of the bang, right? So when you're dry firing, all you want to do is hear that click. And every other time outside of that, pretty much, when you're pulling that trigger, you wanna hear a bang. But in dry fire, you want to hear that click.
And I know you've also mentioned that you can tell when your trigger kind of resets, and I would imagine you're much more aware of that point when you're dry firing.
The Glock definitely, and you'll find a lot of firearms have what's called a trigger reset. So after you pull that trigger and the slide cycles, you keep having pressure on that trigger, and then as you release it, you don't release it completely. You kind of just let it kind of pull back towards the front of the barrel, and then you'll hear a click, or at least you'll On the Glock, you hear an audible click. And you can even feel it click on your finger, on your trigger finger. And that's all the slack, they call it, all of the distance that you need to go before you can re-engage that trigger and fire off another round. Obviously, if you're dry firing, you're going to have to manually cycle the slide just to simulate a round being expended. And then you'll kind of give up the slack, and you'll hear it go click. And then that's exactly where you want to start from, and you'll find you align the sights again, get a nice sight picture, and then once you're ready to fire, you can just fire that, pull that trigger back towards you in a smooth roll, and that will shorten the distance from shot to shot in terms of the amount of trigger movement, your trigger finger movement too. So yeah, that's definitely a skill set that I'm working on as well. I would, in the beginning, have a tendency to kind of slap the trigger in between pulls, you know, meaning I'd pull it all the way back, and then as the round fired, or the cycle slid back, I would take all the slack up off and even take my finger off the trigger and then re-engage the trigger, and so I'd have to pull it constantly.
All right, and with all of this, I mean, the focus has been training. Was there anything else you wanted to say about training?
Yeah, you know, I just, for those of you who do have ammunition and who do have funds, I think my voice just cracked there, but you want to get your training done, and you guys know I'm a big fan of Masayub, so I just wanted to I went on his website and looked at his schedule, and I just wanted to give him a little bit of a plug. His 2013 schedule is on his website. His website's what, MasadaYubGroup.com?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, MasadaYubGroup.com, MasadaGroup.
AYOOB.
Group.com.
He can't spell today, guys. MasadaYubGroup.com. Yeah, you'll find it. There's a tab for schedule, and I can run through some of the dates here. He just had his first class of the year down in Live Oak, Florida, where they are located. And then he has stuff starting in April, going all the way through November, all over the country. And you should check it out. It looks like August is really busy. He's got four different things going on that month, which is basically every weekend.
Why don't we just run through it real quick? What are the MAG 40 classes?
We've got April in Arkansas and Illinois, May in California, Sacramento, June, Kalamazoo, Battle Creek, Michigan, and Rochester, Indiana, July, Onalaska, Washington, August, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Snow Hill, Maryland, Enfield, New Hampshire, Meriden, Connecticut, September, Salt Lake City, Utah, and he does have a note here, this class always sells out, so sign up early. October, Centerton, Kansas, and Live Oak, Florida, again, also with a note for Live Oak that it sells out, so sign up early. And then the final one of the year for MAG 40 is in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, so definitely get some training. Looks like he's even got a MAG 80 class and a MAG 120 class. I'm not sure what even the MAG 120 class is, but that sounds pretty awesome.
Sounds more than intense.
Yeah, I think in MAG 80, he goes with, he teaches that, I forget what it's called, retention techniques, where you're kind of taught how to, if someone tries to reach for your firearm in your hand or from your holster, how to kind of keep control of the situation and keep your control of your firearm. So I think that would be definitely neat if and when you guys go to MAG 40 and take that class as a secondary step. So, yeah, I mean, we always emphasize training, and as we get more and more experienced in the field, it's obvious that there is no such thing as too much training. It's very much like MAG 40, you know. You can learn as much as you can from bad training as you can good training, too, especially when you get to the point where you're able to recognize what works and what doesn't. And it's kind of like martial arts, kind of like Bruce Lee said, you know, take what works, discard the rest, you know. So keep an open mind on these things and get some good training from guys like Mas.
And I would just say a couple other things. The dry firing, while it's a very practical training for shooters, it could be a really effective way to engage people who are curious but are really scared or intimidated. Maybe it's a way to get some of the women in your lives that are a little hesitant. You know, there's not going to be all of the loud and the range and all of the other people observing, depending on how your range is set up. It can be a very private way to start engaging.
Sure. I mean, there's nothing intimidating about dry firing, you know, other than someone who's never encountered a firearm, perhaps. You know, there might be that initial, whoa, you know, I've never actually held a gun before type of mentality. But yeah, I mean, I would think most people would be afraid of that recoil, afraid of that big bang, afraid of that, frankly, the power in your hands in a loaded firearm and using it. So yeah, taking away the fuel, the ammunition of the firearm so that it is just a dry firing exercise might ease a lot of people's tensions and worries and say, oh, that wasn't too bad. But ultimately, you do have to get them out on the range and have them fire live rounds to fully appreciate the responsibility of using a firearm.
Yeah, and I think that about wraps up today's show.
If you want to get a hold of us, feel free to email us at...
It's ccwpodcast@gmail.com.
And feel free to visit our websites, ccwpodcast.podomatic.com and ccwshow.blogspot.com. And feel free to leave us a great or not so great review, preferably great, on iTunes. And with that, thank you for listening.
Semper Pretare.